Happy Saturday, Nashville. Welcome into Michelle and Junie. Michelle Knezvik, Junie Riddle on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We are live from Bridgestone Arena today. The Predators will kick off at 1 p.m. today. Max Herz will join us in an hour to discuss the Nashville Predators and preview their game against the Winnipeg Jets this afternoon. We'll have some playoff implications, Junie. The Preds are sitting 4 points behind in a playoff spot, but 3 games on hand over Winnipeg. So going to be an exciting day here in Bridgestone. The arena starting to fill up. But right now, discussing some Tennessee Titans news, some NFL free agency news, and specifically discussing the reports surrounding Kevin Byard these last couple of days, or, well, just these last 24 hours that came out. Michael Lombardi went on a GM podcast discussing how the Tennessee Titans approached Kevin Byard to ask him for a pay cut. Ben Arthur was able to confirm that with somebody on Kevin Byard's side of things. And we have a couple of texts on the text line. And I told you I wasn't going to read you this one. And somebody didn't. Oh, this is Bradford in Nashville. He said, better tell Carthon, letting go of Kevin Byard is like talking about somebody's mama. You better not.
That's a good one. That is a good one. I don't know. When you look at all the teams in the NFL, you know, not every single team has a guy like Kevin Byard. Kevin Byard has everything you want in a football player, not just as a safety, but as a football player on your team. This guy has leadership. He's vocal. He's positive. He takes care of himself outside of the building. He performs on a year-to-year basis at an elite level. He's a top five player at his position in the league. And you're going to him to ask for a pay cut when he's the one guy that stays healthy in the secondary, that keeps this secondary afloat, that makes splash plays on defense every single season. It just doesn't make sense to me. And especially when you just paid Harold Landry and he tore his ACL, that would be a guy that I would go to first saying, hey, can we restructure to try and free up some cap space to fill up some holes? And they may have done that. But I just wouldn't have gone to Kevin Byard about this. If anything, the fact that this team did not offer him an extension to kind of put, like, kind of extend and put some money elsewhere to free up some cap, the fact that they weren't even willing to talk about an extension with Kevin Byard, just it just doesn't make any sense to me unless this organization is really trying to go into a full rebuild.
Well, and that's the next question, Junie. I mean, with the news of this coming out and with them approaching Kevin Byard, does that change the way we look at this offseason? And does that, you know, in your mind signal to you, could there be other moves they're trying to make or other veteran guys they're trying to move off of? You know, when you compile all this information and the news about shopping Derrick Henry, however you want to describe the word shopping or whatever that means to you, and approaching Kevin Byard about a pay cut, does that change your mind in the way you're viewing this franchise and how they're moving forward? And maybe they are trending towards a rebuild.
I'll put it this way. If this team wants to rebuild, Kevin Byard's not the player you need to move off of. The player you want to move off of is Ryan Tannehill. Kevin Byard is more valuable to this team than Ryan Tannehill is. Ryan Tannehill has won 2 playoff games back in the 2019 season. That was 4 years ago, okay? And in those 2 playoff games, he didn't even throw for 100 yards. Any time that Ryan Tannehill has had the pressure on his back to make plays in the playoffs, he has come up short. We all know that Ryan Tannehill is not going to be a part of this team after next year. I really don't believe that, but Kevin Byard is a player that I could see being here for at least the next 2 to 3 and maybe even 4 years if he takes care of himself. I know that members of the secondary break down a lot younger than quarterbacks do, but only the elite quarterbacks in NFL history play up into their 40s. Mm-hmm. Ryan Tannehill is already past the age of 35. Like, he's starting to get into that area of where the mid-tier quarterbacks that aren't playing at a high level start to move out of the league and start moving into more of a backup role, or they're on a new team every single year being a bridge quarterback. That is what Ryan Tannehill is. And I've been steadfast in faith in saying that even towards the end of the season last year, that I think if this team wants to retool, keep the defense intact, re-sign Jeffrey Simmons, move off Tannehill, and start using 2023 to retool your offense and figure out a way to go and get your next guy to reset this run. If you go out and try and get a rookie quarterback in the next couple of years, he's going to have a good foundation on defense that's going to assist his production and his confidence, because he's going to constantly be in football games with a guy like Kevin Byard and Jeffrey Simmons at the helm on your defense.
And Junie, you've talked about this many times. You've brought up the idea of, you know, moving off Ryan Tannehill, and you feel really confident, or not confident, really passionate about it, that you believe that would be a better move for them to make. But I sit here and I think it's just not going to happen. You know, we can beat this drum and say, why haven't you moved off of him? Why haven't you moved off of him? But it's not going to happen, right? I mean, we look at this team right now, and I don't see any way possible it happens this year. I really don't.
Well, Ben Arthur made a good point in saying if they cut Kevin Byard right now, they save $6 million. If they use him as a post-June 1st designation, they save $14 million. You talk about that with Ryan Tannehill, you save $18 million right now, and then you save $27 million in the post-June 1st. My thing is, and it's a question that I'll pose to you, is would you rather cut Ryan Tannehill, or would you rather cut Kevin Byard?
I don't think that's a question. Obviously, it's Ryan Tannehill.
Because
here's the thing. They're both – we talked about the leaders on this team. You've got Kevin Byard, Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, Jeffrey Simmons. Who am I forgetting?
I'd say it'd be four.
Those four. Okay, so Tannehill, Henry, Simmons, and Byard.
Yes.
Those are the four pillars on this team. Those are the four leaders on this team. I think if you get rid of any of them – you're going in a full rebuild. So the way I look at it is it would be more beneficial for this team to move off of a quarterback, because then you actually are going to be bad. You're going to be very bad.
Yes.
And you have a chance to, you know, get a higher draft pick and go for one of those young studs in the 2024 draft. So I don't think that is so much the question, but I think it would be absolutely absurd to move off of Byard out of any of those four people.
Oh, 100%.
The way I look at it is, okay, if you get off of Tannehill or Henry, it's a full rebuild. But when I talk about if you're going into a full rebuild mode and you look at those four guys, to me, the ones who would make the most sense of keeping during a rebuild would be Jeffrey Simmons and Kevin Byard. Because Kevin Byard is everything we've talked about. You know, his leadership, everything, leads by example. But then Jeffrey Simmons is still young, and you use those two guys to rebuild your roster. Whereas I look at Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry probably has three, maybe four more years, and I think that's a little giving on my end of things.
It depends. I think he could still be in the league in 4 years, but playing at a high production, a workhorse back like he's been for the Titans for the last 5 years, that I don't see. I think Derrick Henry has two good seasons left in him, but he probably will stick around.
But not even my point to this. Like, when you look at it and you look at those four people, who would you keep during a rebuild? I don't – but then – at the same time, moving off any of them would be a rebuild. So I don't understand if – it wouldn't make sense if you were to move off of Kevin Byard over a Tannehill or a Derrick Henry.
I see moving off Tannehill and Henry, which I'm for moving off Tannehill. I think Derrick Henry is such a legend in this town that you should try and keep a guy like that on your roster for as long as you can.
I agree. I think they want
to keep him a Titan forever, because he's one of the best players, if not the best player, in your organization's history. But moving off the guys, your leaders on offense, opposed to defense. This team's identity is their defense. I don't think it's a full-scale rebuild if you move off of your offensive leaders because there's so many holes and you really have to redo the offense anyway.
I would say
it would be more of a retool if they got rid of the offense. If you get rid of your strength on defense and then you got holes all over your defense, you don't have star power on defense, and your offense is as weak as it is, then it would be like, okay, now we got to plug in holes all over this roster rather than just one side of the ball. That's where I stand with it.
Well, I mean, the way I look at it is if you get rid of Ryan Tannehill, you're either going to have Malik Willis or Josh Dobbs, and you're not going to win games with them, and you're going to be very, very bad. So I look at that from the perspective of how successful will you be. You will not be successful if you move off Ryan Tannehill at the quarterback position.
I'd say for a short time, rather than if you move off your defensive players,
yes, creates
chaos on both sides of the ball, then you're talking about years to come. You move off Tannehill, yeah, 2023 is going to be brutal. It's going to be hard to get through, but at least it sets you up in a position to not only free up money to build up assets and get other guys and plug into the offense to around the quarterback, but it also gives you the opportunity to go out and get your guy in the draft and try and reset that winning window that you once had in the last, I would say, from 16 to 2021.
Well, and that's the thing about the NFL is you can rebuild quickly because of the way that the NFL is set up, whereas we talk about it in the NHL, it's there's a lot more to it, right? A lot of these young prospects have to come up through the ranks, whereas in the NFL, it's a lot easier to rebuild and move off of guys. Derek Mason had some comments on Kevin Byard and Ryan Tannehill and this Tennessee Titans organization as a whole. We're going to get to those comments coming up next on Michelle and Junie on 102.5, 106.3 in the Gabe Nashville app.
Mike Texan says, D-Mace, who is the most likely current Titan to be on a different team this year? Henry, Byard, or Tannehill?
Ooh.
Someone else.
God, heavy question to come
in. That is
in.
a good question.
Coming in hot.
More than likely will be on another team sooner rather than later. Man, that's a tough one. I would say Derrick Henry. I think because of the depth that they have at running back, meaning Hassan Haskins, I think they want to see what he can do. And this is a good time to see that because, you know, this is a team that many are not picking on. You know, we look at this team and we think, man, are they even going to win in an AFC South?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to make those transitions, then, you know, you need to do it now to see what you have going into the next following year. So if I'm picking a guy, as much as I hate saying it, I think it would be Derrick Henry.
Jason on the midday show yesterday, answering the question, if one player is not on the Tennessee Titans, Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, or Kevin Byard, or which one is most likely to be on a team moving forward? Welcome back in, Michelle and Junie. Michelle Knezovic, Junie Riddle, we are live from Bridgestone Arena. Max Herz will join us in about 45 minutes. We'll get you set for the Predators and Jets coming up at 1 p.m. today. If you want to weigh in on our phone and text line, 615-737-1025, or watch us streaming, watch our beautiful faces on the stream. You can watch us streaming on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day, Monday through Friday, 6 to 6. And, of course, on Saturdays. Today it's going to be, we were on here 9 all the way until 1 today as Max Herz takes over for the pregame show from 12 to 1 today. Got a packed day on the program. Junie, that was Derek Mason, you know, discussing if there were one of these Tennessee Titans players, Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, or Kevin Byard, if the Titans decided to move off one of them, who is the most likely to be on another roster? And I would agree with Derek Mason on that situation.
Really?
I think I would agree with him. You know, it just depends on what this team is doing. Right now I look at this Tennessee Titans team and I don't know what they're doing. I equivalate it to the Nashville Predator situation before the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. We didn't know, and that's what makes Sports Talk Radio so fun, is because we can act like we know what David Poile and Rand Carthon and Vrabel and John Hines and everybody's thinking, but we truly don't know where their heads are at. I mean, when all of the news came out about the Nashville Predators and they started making aggressive big moves at the trade deadline, David Poile announced his retirement. They announced Barry Trotz would be taking over. I mean, I was floored. That was a bombshell to me. I could never have predicted that that's what the Preds would have done ahead of the trade deadline.
They clicked the reset button really quickly.
Real quick. They reset real quick. But I think, you know, when you look at that and just from hearing from Predators fans and fans living here in Nashville, they were happy because they knew the direction that the franchise was going in. And they knew that if they were going to make a financial investment in buying season tickets and buying jerseys and a time investment on coming to these games and supporting this team, at least they knew what they were supporting and the general direction of the franchise. Are they going to go in a rebuild mode? Okay, then we're not going to be frustrated when we don't make the playoffs because it's a lot of young guys and we're excited to see what they can do out there. But we don't have these expectations to make the playoffs because we know that we're in a transition period right now. Now on the flip side, I look at this Tennessee Titans team. The fans right now, with the new general manager, that sparked a light. And I think towards, you know, the end of the year after the 7-game losing streak, it was very frustrating for Tennessee Titans fans. And then to have Jacksonville win the AFC South on the last game of the year, John Robinson gets fired in the middle of the season. Then Rand Carthon gets hired. And there's been so many, you know, turning of the tide and so many things changing. But I look now at this team and there's still a question mark.
Yeah.
And some of the moves that they made in free agency, not huge splashy moves, but just safe moves.
Safe contracts, not a lot of guaranteed money.
Which is fine.
Good role players that, you know, they're moving towards getting away from the high-end guys who are constantly getting injured that have a super heavy cap hit. And that's why, you know, with the Kevin Byard situation, that's why it's so frustrating that they're going to him. But to stay on topic here about you know, Derek Mason thinking, you know, if anybody's going to be going away, that it's Derek Henry. I understand that there have been reports out that they've been shopping Derek. I just don't think that out of the three of those, the most value you would get, or if you were to move off Derek Henry and let's say they tried to look for a trade, the least amount of value in return and also the smallest amount of cap money coming back to you is moving off Derek Henry. And arguably, he is the best player on your entire team right now. I mean,
the
awful
offensive player.
I would still say he's the best player on the entire roster. I mean, 1,500 yards behind that offensive line when they were having to call people up from the practice squad that we hadn't seen since training camp, and he's still going out there and 15 touchdowns, 15. I mean, it was just a crazy good year for him. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think that you're getting the bang for your buck that you think you are moving off a guy like that than you would moving off a guy like Ryan Taylor. Like, the Titans aren't going to lose more games because they're moving off Ryan Tannehill. Or, I mean, because they're moving off Derrick Henry, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? I just don't think that losing a guy like that is going to give you the result that you want going forward.
No, I understand what you're saying. And I mean, when we talked about the shopping Derrick Henry reports, I mean, he's a running back at the back end of his career. Yeah, he was second in rushing this year, right behind Josh Jacobs. But let's look at the offensive line that he was running through and that was blocking for him. I mean, I know that people can easily look in at him and just say, oh, I think he's lost a step because he's coming off the foot injury. And I don't like that argument just because I think it's very unfair when you he's also 30, right? Like, they just, people will like say, oh, yep, no, he's lost a step. If he didn't break his foot last year, he would have made that run. And it's like, okay, well, it's so easy to sit back and point at him and be like, he should have been able to run through that guy, or he should have been able to break away right there, or cut this way and break and get a big one. I'm like, okay, the production was still there. I mean, behind one of the worst offensive lines in the entire league. I mean,
no passing game to compensate. Every team that lined up against the Titans last year knew exactly what was going to happen.
That's what I'm saying. And the way I look at Derrick Henry is, I don't think that next year he's going to take some huge step back. I mean, the offensive line has gotten better. Hopefully they get some other receivers, so there's some other options, some other threats on the offense. But let's also think about the offensive line that was in front of him, the fact that he was the only offensive weapon. When Malik Willis was playing, you knew that Derrick Henry was getting the ball almost every single play. The boxes were stacked for him almost
9 guys
every single time.
Safeties were creeping in. Like, the vertical threat of the offense was not even there. No defense was scared of the Titans throwing the ball over the top. So Derrick Henry, with the worst offensive line in the league, was seeing 9 guys stacked in the box, just zero threat of an elite passing offense. So
he missed Thursday Night Football. He didn't play. And I think he lost, or I think he was below Josh Jacobs by about 150 yards. So an opportunity, if maybe he played in every single game,
to be the leading rusher.
To be the leading rusher in a year where everybody's saying he lost his step, he was playing behind one of the worst offensive lines, had no other offensive threat. So, you know, when you look at this Derrick Henry, the value to other NFL teams out there isn't there because he is a running back, because he is older in his career, but he is very valuable to this Tennessee Titans organization. A couple updates quickly. At 11 a.m., Vanderbilt in Michigan will tip off for the second round of the NIT. That'll be in Memorial today in Nashville. And also some breaking news, Kansas coach Bill Self will not coach in Saturday's game against Arkansas. So Bill Self is still not going to be coaching for Kansas today against Arkansas. Coming up next, though, Junie and I are going to take a look at the Tennessee Volunteers and preview their game against Duke today, a little 4-5 seed matchup. Joe Rexroad will be live covering it all. Excited to break down this matchup with Junie. Coming up next on Michelle and Junie on 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app. I love this song. It gets me so excited. Michelle and Junie, welcome back in. Michelle Knezvik, Junie Riddle, 102.5, 106.3, the Game. You can watch us live streaming on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube. We've got Nick Frazier joining us. He is live from our Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios today. Talking a little college hoops, we're going to have Joe Rexroad join us in about 15 minutes at 10:45 to help us preview this Tennessee-Duke matchup. He is live from Orlando and has been covering the Tennessee Volunteers all year and is covering them throughout the tournament today. Covered them at that late game, the Louisiana game that they barely escaped, and he also got a chance to watch that amazing Furman, Virginia game. He got to be courtside for that. So Joe is living his best life. Joe Rexroad will join us in about 15 minutes at 10:45. And then at 11, Max Herz is going to join us here in Bridgestone Arena. We're going to talk some Preds. We're going to preview the Winnipeg Jets and Nashville Predators game today here in Nashville. Going to be some playoff implications to this game. Preds are sitting 4 points behind for a playoff situation, but have 3 games in hand on the Winnipeg Jets. So, Junie, we discussed it a little bit earlier, and we want to hear from Vols fans. We want to hear from Tennessee Volunteers, basketball fans, and how you are feeling right now, how you felt going into March, how you felt after the SEC tournament. What are your thoughts today as Tennessee will take on Duke at 1:40 today in Orlando? And there is a lot of people thinking that Tennessee has absolutely no shot today, right? Everything, they lose their point guard. Rick Barnes' record in March isn't great. They had a lot of turnovers. They barely survived Louisiana, but they survived. And yeah, what is the name of this game? It's Survive in Advance. Doesn't matter about the last game. You're moving on. You're going to face the 5-seed Duke. Tennessee is the 4-seed. It's a pretty tough second-round matchup. But, you know, when I look at this team and when I look at this matchup, we talked about it earlier today, a couple fans not feeling so confident. One texter texted in earlier this morning and said, even if Rick Barnes has the best players, that they don't feel confident with him coaching when it comes to postseason and when it comes to March, which is fair. Tennessee has had some great teams, and Tennessee's never been to a Final Four, but they've always had, or not always, but as of recent, they've had a lot of talented teams that have the talent to go to a Final Four. They have a talent to win a national championship. And to be honest, when they even had Zakai Ziegler in the lineup this year, I had hesitations about this Tennessee team. The guard play was inconsistent. Well, if you were to tell me that they won an NCAA tournament game with Vescovy basically irrelevant when it comes to the offense, I would have said there is no shot. There was absolutely no shot they win a game. And that's what happened on Thursday night when they played Louisiana. I know a Louisiana team. I get it. But it's the tournament.
But they
and
played
we can see
horrible.
Anything.
But they Louisiana still won. Louisiana played bad. No, I'm talking about Louisiana. Like, Louisiana played horrible. The Vols didn't play good, okay? They played bad. They didn't play horrible. They had an excellent defensive game plan. You know, I mean, there was no penetration into the middle going into the lane for Louisiana. Like, they had no motion on their offense. Tennessee did an excellent job defensively, and that's the one thing that they're going to have to do today against Duke. They're going to have an excellent defensive plan, defensive matchups, score in transition, get the ball up the court. And also, I mean, guys like Tyreek Key and Santiago Vescovy have to really be hitting from beyond the perimeter today as well. I just see this as I've seen this song and dance with this Vols team, especially since Ziegler has been out. I just want to see them close a game, and I will have a little bit of belief. It's just when they were up 48-30 against Louisiana, I was like, wow. I was like, maybe they finally kind of got it. This Louisiana team is a really good three-point shooting team. They have really good guard play, and that's what it takes to win in March, and Tennessee did a great job of shutting them down. But again, what happened? The tail end of that second half, Tennessee's up 48-30, and then that lead just slowly dwindles away, and there's just nobody taking charge on the offensive end. It just seems like nobody wants to step up to the plate and get those baskets that it takes to close the games, and we've seen it. We've seen Vescovy at the line choke away a game before, and it's just like, do I really, you know, rely on him after his performance in the first round to bounce back and really take this Tennessee team over the top to beat a really hot Duke team? I just look at the trajectory of these two teams. I know Duke played in the weak ACC. I know all of their wins since mid-February have been against subpar programs. But I'm just being real. Right now, Duke, the tear that they went on for the last month, and through the ACC tournament, just basically wiping through that tournament, nobody was really touching them. And then now in March, they really took care of Oral Roberts, which a lot of people were talking about as a potential first-round upset. I just see Tennessee barely scraping by as of late, and Duke has been really thriving and really kind of hitting a groove, which is what you want to see from a team like that going into the tournament. So I'm like, purely based off trajectory and what I've seen as of late is why I'm giving Duke the edge. And I think that that's why a majority of people are not giving Tennessee much of a shot.
Well, and the biggest key, I think, to this game for Tennessee is they need to limit the turnovers. That was a problem here when they were in Nashville for the SEC tournament. I think they had 14 in both games against Ole Miss, which they won comfortably by about 15 points, but Ole Miss is one of the worst teams in the SEC. And then Missouri, they had this almost the same amount of turnovers, and Missouri was able to win. They're another SEC team that's still alive in the tournament right now. But losing your point guard, you need to have somebody else take over that role of running your offense. And I think Mayshak has done a good job. I think he's a confident freshman for this team. But what else needs to happen is there needs to be confidence across the board. Vescovy, Josiah Jordan-James. Josiah Jordan-James was recruited by Duke, wanted to go to Tennessee, which is, you know, like kind of full circle moment, right? Playing, he's a veteran on this team. He was injured for a majority of this year. That's also something we have to remember. Julian Phillips and Josiah Jordan-James were injured for a better part of this season. And when they had Zakai Ziegler, but both of those two guys were out, they were still picking up quality wins on their resume. So this team we haven't seen, or we saw briefly at the beginning of the year, they had that win against Kansas on a neutral court, but we haven't seen this team at full strength all together. When I look at this Tennessee team, and if I like need three keys to victory for today, the first one's handle the basketball. Do not turn over the basketball or have just obvious turnovers. I mean, some of the passes that they made in Louisiana against Louisiana the other day were just like, you wanted to pull your hair out because it's like, they're not even looking to get the pass. They're not even ready for you to throw the ball to them. And that just to me looked like first game in the tournament, came out slow. They need to be mentally, physically, and emotionally locked into today's game. The mental aspect of this, of just focusing on the little things that you can't have a messy basketball game. You need to be a clean team. You need to limit those turnovers. Secondly, I want to see a lot from Juroš Plavšić. He's a 7-footer. His wingspan is over 7 feet. I want to see a lot of production from him in the paint, and I think that he's a guy where in the tournament we've seen him get more minutes than he got in the regular season.
Yes.
He has taken a lot of the minutes, especially with Zakai Ziegler being out. In third, zone defense. This team is able to shut other teams down by playing zone. They played a lot better against Missouri when they switched from man-to-man to a zone defense, because we already know the level of play that this team is just as far as defensively. I mean, they held an Alabama team who scores about 90 points a game to 58 points. They had at one point one of the best defenses in the country and almost historically in college basketball. Their defense was so incredibly efficient. With the loss of Zakai Ziegler, that obviously hurts. But this team had to learn to play without him a little bit during the year because he found himself in foul trouble a majority of the time.
They did, yes.
So if this team, if Meshack can be confident and run the offense, if Vescovy, I don't think Vescovy needs to have a huge game to win.
Really?
I think if he can give you 15 points, make his foul shots, you're good.
Yeah.
If you can get some production, a little bit of production from everybody on this team, Plavšić, Vescovy, Julian Phillips is going to need to be a factor in this game. Josiah Jordan James is going to need to be a factor. If Meshack can handle the ball and run this offense and all of those guys I mentioned, Key can be a factor. If they can all offensively produce a little bit, I think this team can win against Duke today. A hot Duke team who's won 10 games in a row. But I look at right now, and I look at March, and take everything away of the skilled players, the type of players you have on this team. Take it all away. Who has more pressure right now? People have counted this Tennessee team out as soon as Zakai Ziegler got injured.
No, and you're 100% right. And I agree with a lot that you had to say. But I would say another important aspect for Tennessee to get this win today is to take – not only care of the basketball, but also make sure that your shot selection is a good shot. And I think sometimes this team often likes to rush into shots. The ball movement has to be there. They have to move the ball around the perimeter. Plavšić down on the post, they need to get him involved. If they can really kind of get him going and really start to center the offense around him early, that's going to open up for guys like Josiah Jordan James, you know, like a Tyreke, like a Santiago Vescovy around the perimeter to where they can get going as well. I think if they start feeding Plavšić down low in the beginning of the game, start moving the ball around the perimeter, taking good shot selections, limiting those turnovers, and the key, the biggest key to all of this is going down the stretch in making those free throws.
Yeah,
if they
so
can
important.
Limit their turnovers, play great defense like they normally do, and just really try and get the best shot possible on each possession, limit those turnovers, this team will likely win this game. But that's a huge ask because
yeah,
we just have not seen it from them.
It's a huge if. It's a huge, you know, it's March, single elimination. There's a lot of pressure. But we have seen it from them. We have seen them get big wins. And for everybody saying and on the text line saying that there's no chance, what are you talking about? You obviously haven't watched this Tennessee basketball team.
But
this year.
I think they're just kind of basing it off since Ziegler has been injured. Because we really haven't
I
just don't think Ole Miss Arkansas wins compared to when they played Missouri and they fell up short going down the stretch. When they played
Ziegler in those games.
Missouri when they played right here in Bridgestone Arena in the SEC tournament. Was they had a consistent lead throughout the entire game. They had a really good game plan going on, but down the stretch, Missouri was the aggressor. Missouri first forced turnovers, and Missouri hit the big shots at the end to close the game, and that was the only difference. And when I see this Tennessee team, I just need to see that from them. If they somehow, you know, close it down the stretch, hit your free throws, you know, eliminate the stupid turnovers, you know, if they played the same way they played against Louisiana, against Duke, they're going to lose by double digits. It's not even lose. They're going to lose bad, and it's going to look ugly. They have to take care of the ball. They have to close down the stretch, and they have to make their free throws. It's just a simple fact, and I just think since Ziegler has been out, it has been inconsistent, and their only two wins that they've had are against Arkansas, which is a decent team. I wouldn't say they're a good team. They're a decent team, and Ole Miss. And that's it. And I just needed to see more to be more confident with them going in against this Duke team that's been red hot the last month.
Coming up next, Joe Rexfield will join us from Orlando. He covered Tennessee's first game in the tournament and will cover their matchup against Duke today. He'll help us preview the Tennessee-Duke matchup, which will be at 1:40 this afternoon. You're listening to Michelle and Junie on 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app. Michelle and Junie, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Michelle Knezevic, Junie Riddle. We are live from Bridgestone Arena, gearing up for the Predators and the Winnipeg Jets coming up at 1 p.m. today. But right now, talking a little college hoops, and we will be joined by Joe Rexroad, who is live from Orlando. Joe, you've been covering Tennessee for the last couple days now. How's Orlando? Have you been just enjoying every second of college basketball? I'm very jealous.
Hey. Did you guys hear that? I just tried to give you a little taste of the Furman marching band.
I love it.
How's it going?
It's going good this morning. You know, discussing a little Tennessee and Duke, and you and I kind of had this discussion, and I texted you earlier this morning, that people really don't think this Tennessee team has any chance against this Duke team. And it's pretty bizarre to me, but what would you say Tennessee has to do, and what chance do you give them to win today, Joe?
Yeah, so I'm not surprised that I figured this would happen. It happens all the time in this tournament. I think especially when you have a couple things involved. You have a brand name, and, you know, this isn't just a brand name. It's a good Duke team that's playing really well now. It's not a great Duke team, you know, and despite this recent surge, it's not a great Duke team. It's a good Duke team playing very well. I think the Rick Barnes aspect also is part of, I think, people being down the ball. But look, they lost a point guard and they had just some offensive stretches that are horrible. But I picked them to win today, you know. And our back and forth with our Duke beat writer, Brendan Mark, he thinks I'm crazy. In fact, he just tried to tell me again I'm crazy. So, look, I think psychology is a huge part of these situations, and I think Tennessee finally has psychology in its favor going into an NCAA tournament game. Rick Barnes has been expected to win every single NCAA tournament game he's ever coached at Tennessee. This is his 10th one. Every loss has been a huge disappointment because they were supposed to win. They are not supposed to win today. That is a great thing to have on your side, and I just think the Vols defensively are going to make it really, really tough on Duke. I think we're going to see, I picked 60-58 Tennessee. They got to hit some shots. They got to make clutch plays. But when you don't have expectations saddling you, it comes a lot easier in this tournament.
We got Joe Rexor joining us live from Orlando. Going to cover Duke and Tennessee coming up at 1:40 today. Joe, when you look at this Tennessee team, they've struggled with injuries all year long. Before Zakai Ziegler, it was Julian Phillips and Josiah Jordan-James. Now those guys are back. Obviously, Zakai is out, but, you know, when you look at this matchup between Duke today, Duke's got those two big freshmen. They also have a point guard who has Final Four experience. When you look at Tennessee and you look at this Duke matchup, Who do you think from Tennessee is going to need to have an X factor today? Whether you talk about, you know, Mayshak running the point guard position or Vescovy, who do you think is going to need to have a big game today? I mean, all of them, but one player specifically.
Yeah, well, I wrote Julian Phillips as my X factor because, you know, he really did nothing the other night, and Tyreek, mm-hmm. he took all his minutes. And he's too long and athletic for this matchup not to be a big factor. He has to play well. Again, he doesn't have to have huge numbers. He needs to be on the floor. He needs to be part of that defense. He needs to get some offensive rebounds, finish. He needs to, you know, help Tennessee match up athletically. But I would say, too, though, and this is actually the reason I gave for picking them, it's Mayshak.
Yes.
Look, I'm really impressed with what he has done, and I watch him now, and I think Rick Barnes should have had him as the backup point guard all year. I didn't see it when he started trying it, and he's not perfect there. But you know what? When they had those droughts the other night, he's the guy who stepped up, wasn't afraid to step up and take a shot and hit those shots.
Mm-hmm.
And defensively, they actually, I think, are better, you could argue, with him at the point than Ziegler. Because so far, I have not seen guys get past him, and he has that size. So when they get, you know, switching on ball screens, they're fine. They don't have a guard, you know, even like a 6'4" guy who can just like post him up like they did with Ziegler. He can handle himself on switches better. So he's the guy. I think Duke is going to try to take away Vescovy like everybody does, and they're going to try to not let Tennessee get the ball inside like everybody does. And I just feel like he's the guy who's got to step up, create, hit some shots, and make the difference today.
So, Joe, he was one of my X factors for today, too. I said Mayshak, and especially because this Tennessee team has had a lot of issues turning over the ball lately, whether it be in the SEC tournament, the game the other night against Louisiana. But somebody that I'm looking to play a lot of minutes today is Juroš Plavšić. Do you think that they're going to try to utilize him in the paint more against Duke today, especially because they have the two big guys on the other end?
Well, I totally agree, and I think they're going to try. Now, will they be able to do it? I don't know. But the interesting thing about Duke is, you know, Derek Lively is a great defensive player. He's going to be a first-round pick. He doesn't mm-hmm. score. He scores by rim running and cleaning up around the basket. Can Plavšić be okay defensively against him and then make him work by trying to guard a 24-year-old man who's 7'1", 265 in the post? You saw what happened when Kentucky kind of left Osher Shibwe alone with him. I mean, he'll score on anybody. So
his fingertips are right there.
Yeah. But what Duke will try to do, of course, is they will try to get him in ball screens, and they're going to try to get Lively's mobility to hurt him. So that, to me, is the whole thing. If you can keep him on the floor for 20 to 25 minutes today, I think you're absolutely going to be able to get some offense out of that.
So, Joe, I got a quick question for you here. You talked about the psychological advantage for Tennessee kind of going into this game being an underdog. During the selection mm-hmm. show when they got matched up against Louisiana, there was a lot of talk like, oh, this is a game to look out for to be a potential first-round upset. And then in the game, we kind of saw Tennessee let up at the very end. And they didn't play their best basketball. What gives you that confidence that they can do that today against a red-hot Duke team that hasn't lost since Valentine's Day?
I've seen it so many times. I mean, like so many times in this tournament, especially the second day of a tournament, you'll see a team. Well, I'll give you I hate to give you this example, Judy. 2009, Sweet 16, you know what I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
I'm in the building watching Louisville annihilate Arizona. You remember it, right?
I do remember this game.
They beat Arizona by about 100, right? And
yes.
Every single person at that site said, oh, God, they're going to kill Michigan State. And I said, man, that's exactly what is Michigan State was. And I know that, you know, Izzo's a really good tournament coach and all that, and they had a great team. But I'm just saying, I see this all the time in this tournament where when it gets flipped on you and all of a sudden everybody's like, oh, yeah, you're toast in this matchup, it helps you. And I just – again, the Vols have never had that in a game under Rick Barnes in this tournament. They've always been the favorite. They've always been expected to win. And I think it helps them. Now, does that mean they're going to execute and all that stuff today? No, but like, look at Purdue last night, man. When you have mm-hmm. – when a game gets close on you and you're supposed to win that game, you get tight and the other team gets loose. And I think they actually have a chance for that to be in their favor for once today.
give it to Joe Rexrow to bring up the game. The last game I cried over a college basketball because I was the biggest T-Will fan in the world as a little kid. But I'll cap this one off with you, Joe. You talked about Mayshak and his ability and his matchup on defense. This Tennessee team has struggled finding somebody to help them close out games offensively. If you could name one guy that you think on the offensive end that can kind of carry them to the finish line, what player is that on this Vols roster?
Well, look, again, I think Duke is going to – I mean, if you can get Vesey shots, he's the guy, right? Mm-hmm. But it's tough. Duke's going to make it tough. To me, probably Josiah Jordan-James. I think that – and last year against Michigan, both those guys had open looks, and they didn't hit them. And you know, they lost. And if one or two of those – probably just one of those goes down, they probably win. So, you know, Duke is going to be more okay with giving him shots than Vesey, of course. I have a feeling he probably is going to step into a couple late in this game, and, you know, maybe hitting those will be the difference.
Joe Rexrow live in Orlando today covering Duke and Tennessee. Joe, really, really quick before we send you off today, but we saw one of the biggest upsets in college basketball. For the second time ever, a 16 seed in FDU beat the number one seed Purdue. You had Purdue to win it all this year, Joe,
in our
bracket contest. But, you know, I want to bring up something really quick and get your thoughts on it. So FDU, actually, I call it the biggest upset ever because they didn't actually win their conference tournament. Merrimack won their conference tournament, but because of this stupid transition rule that you need to transition for 4 years from Division II to Division I, Merrimack has now won two conference tournaments and hasn't been able to compete in the NCAA tournament because of this rule. What did you think about the game yesterday, and is this the biggest upset in college basketball ever?
Yeah, it is. It's just like you said. I mean, if you look at the numbers, like they are like basically the worst defensive team, and they're all 6'3 or under. I mean, it's just astounding, and I couldn't believe it as I was watching it. But again, like all those guys for Purdue, wide open shot, you tighten up and you just miss them and you turn it over, seven turnovers for the freshman Smith, and just worst nightmare for Purdue realized. So, yeah, great bracket by me. And, yes, I agree with you. Absolutely the biggest upset. It's bigger than UMBC over Virginia.
Yes, and Zach Edey punched the whiteboard. And I don't know if you saw that picture, but that was after
I thought somebody kicked loss. That. I mean, it makes sense, the 7'5 guy with his big old hands.
Well, Joe, enjoy Orlando. Enjoy covering Tennessee Duke today. They tip off at 1:40. Thanks for hopping on with us, previewing some college hoops. And enjoy some sun, too. Try to get some sun after the game. It's an early one.
Yeah, okay. I'll try.
All right, don't burn yourself, Joe.
No, I got the block on.
Joe Rexrow from The Athletic joined us, helped us preview Tennessee and Duke. They will tip off at 1:40. You can also follow him at Joe Rexrow on Twitter. He will be covering the entire game, and if Tennessee moves on to the next round, he will cover them as well. Coming up next, we have got an hour before the pregame show. Max Herz will join Junie and I, help preview the Preds and the Winnipeg Jets coming up this afternoon. We are live from Bridgestone Arena today on Michelle and Junie on 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app.